Coming to you straight from the most reliably biased source on the Matrix, this is the Anarchy and Podcasting Network, and I am Opti. Welcome to the Neo-Anarchist Podcast. So, about that last episode. First, thanks to all of the runners who came to help. You probably noticed I wasn't there, but thanks to Shifty, Zenbubble, the Decker Atlas, Marv the Murderer, and Geist, the Ares goons that were waiting for me at the HQ got taken care of. Actually, I was in Seattle this last week, supposedly having a secret meeting with my contact inside Ares. Well, as it turns out, she ain't the chummer that I thought she was, and gave the gun gods the location that I was broadcasting from in the Emerald City. And you heard how the rest of the story goes. Ares sends Seraphim agents to take me out before the Ares cast goes live, I get the kids out the back, and I get shocked down and stuffed in a bag by a Seraphim goon. Of course, lucky for me, and unlucky for them, my tech guy decides to go live with a broadcast and continue sending out the feed to known contacts of mine in Seattle. So, for those of you who got an odd message saying I needed help, I apologize. And I also forgive you for not getting there in time to be helpful. At any rate, this episode is more about who was there. By the time I woke up, thanks to a stim patch and a nose full of whiskey breath, I was knee-deep in dead Seraphim agents and face-to-face with a guy I hadn't seen in ages. Captain Calico Jack just happened to be in town, and not because he owed me a favor and not because he wanted to get paid, but because he decided he was bored and wanted to have some fun, he decided to take out an entire Seraphim Spec Ops unit and rescued me. Now, he still won't tell me how he did it, but the takeaway is, right after I woke up, I hopped in his submersible diesel truck, which he calls the Rum Punch Express, and we were off. Yes, it is a submersible pickup. Yes, it really is called the Rum Punch Express. And yes, it really does have a jacuzzi in the back, and yes, there were people in it when he came to the rescue. But if you know Jack, that's just par for the course. Captain Jack's a rough-and-tumble dwarf captain of a pirate crew. A bit lecherous, but he's likable enough once you get to know him. But he became a Shadowrunner at some point. He and I have found common cause over the years, usually because of our high value on equality and freedom, but he is quite loyal. I could do without his mentor spirit, Dragon Slayer, although I have to admit that often enough I've found common cause with him, too. Jack likes the freedom and the high seas aspect of piracy, but he really hates being likened to those old pirate tropes like R and Matey, so I'd watch it, unless you won't miss your fingers. He was born in the high seas, as a matter of fact, somewhere around the Bermuda Triangle, oddly enough, but it isn't safe there, Crows, so don't go snooping. His first memories were of Cassidy Barbossa's ship, and he learned all the good and bad lessons that you do being raised around lawless folk. That was a long time ago. Long enough for the awakening to happen to him and to get him thrown off the ship when they realized he was a dwarf. He was rescued by a ship, which he promptly repaid by sticking a gun in their faces and taking the crew as his own. He also awakened with adept abilities, so it really didn't matter how many people were on the boat, he was taking over. It causes me to wonder if pirate adepts are an actual thing. He was a pirate till the 50s, to hear him tell it, then, according to legend, he met up with the street legend Kane, who got to an unhealthy level of rum consumption with Jack, and the two started a pissing contest, both figuratively and literally. Kane goes around saying that he could be a better pirate than Jack ever could be, and Jack responds by saying Shadowrunning is kid's play. By the end of the night, a bet is made, and the two switch careers, never to look back. That's what I heard, anyway, but you know what they say about the truth. Some of it actually happened. He went on to run the shadows in Seattle mostly, dealing with mostly typical shadow fare, although there was this one particular thing he mentioned to me about his nihilist cult trying to summon chthonic creatures from the metaplane or whatever, but whatever they were trying to do, the baddies ended up worshipping and calling this awakened kraken onto Seattle off the docks. If you can imagine Jack on an old Danish warboat yelling and screaming and hunting like he was Ahab going after Moby Dick, that's what happened, or at least he swears that's what happened. I got to know him pretty well when we fought in Masaru's uprisings against the Imperials in the Philippines in the early 60s. Pretty much everyone else I met or fought with back then was dead, but not Jack. He's too drunk to die. Did I mention that his initiation involved him getting so drunk that he could hardly see and then performing his usual shadow tasks without any perceivable error? It's gotten so bad that now he can't actually muster his best mojo unless he's already good and drunk. So, that's the guy I hop in with after being rescued. Didn't take long for Ares to send another squad after us. Thankfully, the Rum Punch Express, while smelling of alcohol, missile propellant, and air freshener, does have quite a few special modifications. Thankfully, I'm starting to wake up a bit more as well by that time. Bullets and mana balls start flying as the Ares girls and boys were trying to cut us off with every means at their disposal. Frankly, all I can think of is getting back to the kids and make sure Pink and Rainbow Smite got them out in time, but I keep looking over at Jack to see that he is smiling like he's having the time of his life. We headed into a tunnel not too far from the Barrens, and Jack and I think we've lost them. Unfortunately, we hadn't, and as we slow down, this Seraphim cyberzombie grabs me through the open window and cracks my ribs by tossing me out of the truck. Jack throws his truck into park and jumps out of the open door like one of those old circus chummers shooting out of a cannon. He hits the cyberzombie so hard that his left arm is now just hanging there by a few cables and hoses. Then, taking out a vintage revolver, which seemed like a more mystical extension of himself than an actual weapon, he ended the zombie with some real gun-foo to the eyes, nose, brainstem, and blood pump. We spent the rest of the night doing everything that we could, from stunt driving to illusion magic to try to ditch our tails, with some of Jack's crew along, Jess Kitten and Puck, hacking the grid guide, turning lights on and off, and somehow, from the Matrix, herding cats in front of Ares transports. But finally, Jack gets his crazy look in his eye and, if possible, gets in a better mood, and then I see him head straight for the docks. He hits the harbor and keeps going, flying right into the frigid water. Jack's guests in the back were less than pleased to go from hot tub to Pacific Ocean in less than 2 seconds, but Jack has always been more at home on the water. And it turns out Ares wasn't expecting this, and we get away scot-free. Until we don't. Helicopters and speedboats, each loaded out Ares-style, are now converging on our location, and I'm saying my goodbyes, finally accepting the captain's offer to help him empty the bottles of rum on board. He's doing some pretty fancy driving, but by the time I was 2 bottles in, just when I wanted it to be over quickly, Jack started making a signal with his hands to a mage that he was keeping track of in the astral named Samriel. This is when I started to see the sea bubble, and Jack drives us straight toward it. The Seraphim didn't know what hit them, and I didn't either, until I looked behind us to see the tentacles and gargantuan head of a 10-story awakened kraken making short work of all the megacorp meat behind us. Jack smiles as he looks at me and says, "I told you, didn't I? He's my kraken now." I know Ares will be back for one or both of us, but they didn't follow us anymore that night. I checked in with Rainbow at the safe house, and the kids and Pink were both safe, so I asked Jack how I could repay his debt. He and I both know that he just had the best night he's had in a long while, but he still demanded that, as payment, I continue to party with him until the sun came up. I was already pretty gone, but just at the point where I wanted to pass out and explain that I was too old for this dreck, Jack would pop me up, throw me in another bar, and we would fight some more saucy wage slaves or gangers until they kicked us out. And it turns out that regardless of how much I felt it the next few days, Jack was right after all. You really never do get too old for this dreck. But while you might not get too old to listen to it, you have just wasted an entirely good slot of time listening to the Anarchy and Podcasting Network. The music serving as the background to Audible Anarchy was written by the legend Marshall Parker and reimagined by Unanonium 88. In closing, I want to give a shout-out to our newest Patreon supporters who have now been sent the first of many offerings of Neo-Anarchist street gear in the form of mighty Neo-Anarchist stickers. Included in this illustrious list of capable crowfunders is Edward Kabara, Clifford Campbell, Richard Marsden, Umberto Lenzi, John Dog Loves Me Apple, Florian Urbanek, Andrew White, Stephen Obergfell, Lazy Load, Joel Cabinet Position De Pippa, Dr. Meat Grinder himself, Bob Loper, and the wonderful folks shadowcasting at the Arcology Podcast. Thank you all. Everything you need to set up and maintain neo-anarchist cells in your area will be provided as we march bravely on. This was the Neo-Anarchist Podcast, and I am your host, the nasally, nerdy and nice, notably nitpicky nerve ninja, never noble, nuking the gnarly nozzle of nascent neo-anarchy, Abdi. Enjoy your freedom, but it's not necessary to always enjoy it as much as Jack.